Philip Bliss is the, there's seven psalms in our hymn book that he either wrote or he did the accompaniment to. And he's the one that wrote the Dare to be a Daniel. What's interesting about him is he only was 38 when he passed away and went to be the Lord. And yet how many songs that he had a part of. But the words of the song are really quite amazing if you read them. I don't know why we never have really been popular today. I don't know. But it's pretty amazing when you look at some of them. Talking about basically what they're at in the song. He's asking you to be a Daniel and to join Daniel's band. And so I think it's a good question for all of us to look at. So who knows, maybe we'll need to make a comeback and it can start in Dalton Hill, right? Be part of it. We've been going through the Dare to be a Daniel. Can you all hear me with this, like this? Okay. The if you remember, we've been going through it. We've had just the series. We're on, I guess, part six. First one, you remember, was Dare to Raise a Daniel. And then in the first chapter, we had Dare to be a Daniel, a man of conviction. Started off when he was a teenager, and he made a lot of decisions, whether it be stand up on the principles of the Word of God and not take meat and things that were offered to idols. And so he wanted to be of conviction by the Word of God. In chapter 2, a man of humility, when he wants to talk about with the serving and doing things with the dream and so on, giving God the credit. Then we had in chapter 3 with the three friends that Glenn talked on and just the stance that they took. You have in chapter 4, you remember he was a man of compassion, talking about the dangers of pride with Nebuchadnezzar, and yet Daniel had compassion, and they even told him that he needed to repent, and which he didn't, but he then also, which makes you think about who's the one that was responsible that led him into captivity? Nebuchadnezzar. Who's the one that took everything out of the temple and destroyed it? And so yet, when you think about the fact that you're telling the man what he could do to avoid problems in his life, it is really quite a testament for Daniel. Last week, remember, we saw that he was talking about with Belteshazzar when he was found weighed and found wanting, and learning from history. And I think all of us can learn from history mistakes that others have made. So that takes us then today in chapter 6 and a little bit about the background. I think we often forget Daniel was hauled off in captivity in 605. The Medes and Persians conquered Babylon in 539. So how many years would that be? 605 minus 539 equals?
65.
66 years of age roughly. Okay, he was hauled off in captivity. If he was roughly 16, 17, that makes him how old? He's in his early 80s. I don't think we give credit when we start looking at some of this. It also will help you understand this chapter better when you recognize his age. Also, something else that's taking place is there's a big question as to who Darius is. I'm not going to try to solve that issue. It could be four different possibilities. Part of the text may help us a little bit in understanding. If you remember in verse 31 of chapter 5, it reads, so Darius the Mede received the kingdom at the age of 62. What does it mean to receive it? It's an interesting question. You go on, and in chapter 6 and verse 1, you have talking about Darius. And then if you go to the end of verse 28 of chapter 6, so Daniel enjoyed success in the reigns of Darius in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. A lot of people believe that Darius and Cyrus are the same, but this text would not indicate that. If you go on a little bit later into chapter 9, see if it will help us. Notice in chapter 9 and verse 1, it says, in the first year of Darius, the son of Esdras, a Median descent, who is made king over the kingdom of the Chaldeans. So what happens is, was he made king because God made him king? That's possible. Or because Darius was simply made king over the Babylonian part of the Mede and Persian Empire. The Medes and Persians were a huge empire. The Babylonian Empire reigned for 87 years. The Medes and Persians reigned for 200 years. So it's very large, and was Darius simply made over the king, over the Babylonian part of this massive empire. But so there's different ones. Some will have Darius and Cyrus, who are had more than one name, which is quite common, whether in Old Testament or New Testament. But anyway, that's what the main part we're interested in, what happens with Daniel, not who Darius is. But Darius was the ruler over the Babylonian, whether it was just the Babylonian part of the Medes and Persians or what. But that gives you the background. But today I like to think about a man of consistency. And you think about it, he's praying in chapter 1. 65, 7 years later, you still find him praying. Still the same thing. Well, think about it. In the great movie, The Chariots of Fire, if you might remember, some of you have seen it. Maybe you're as old as I am and remember the movie. And in it, you have Charles Schultz, the great American sprinter, goes up to Eric Little, if you remember, and gave him a piece of paper. And on the piece of paper, and this is reported to have actually took place, Charles Schultz wrote on a piece of paper, 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 20. And on it, it says, "For those who honor me, I will honor." And the reason Schultz gave it to him is because Eric Little refused to run on Sunday, which happened to be the race he was supposed to be in. He chose not to run because that was the Lord's day and he wasn't going to do it. The movie doesn't cover it, but he actually, after he went on, they moved him into the quarter mile, and he won the quarter mile and set a record. Little then was asked to run the following Sunday to run as well and anchor his team in the mile relay. He once again said, "No, it's Sunday. I won't do it," even though he was the world record holder and the gold medalist. So it's interesting, but it's how he has it. The reason I bring it up is I think it really fits well with Daniel 6. If you'll honor me, I'll honor him. The reason I bring it up is because you think about it in 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 4, you remember Solomon followed the Lord well until in verse 4 it said his foreign wives did what? Turned his heart away from following God. He didn't finish well. Same thing happens with Hezekiah, a king who did very well in Israel's history, but then you remember he showed all the wealth of it to the Babylonians. And in 2 Kings chapter 20, it makes the statement, 17 and 19, he was going to have punishment. His relatives were, and Hezekiah did not repent and just said, "Okay, it doesn't affect me. So I'm not going to worry about it, even though it's going to affect his kids and his family and grandkids." Notice he didn't win the way he could have, but that's not what you find with Daniel. So a man of consistency. So let's look at it. We know the story really well. Let's look at it as the prominence of Daniel. And what's amazing, you think about it, the prominence that you have of him. If you think about it, you were with the Babylonians. You're now in your 80s. You're made third in charge in the previous chapter. The Medes and Persians conquer, and they kill the king. Why didn't they kill Daniel if he's third in charge? You're starting at the bottom. You're in exile from Judah. And notice you already have risen into administrative with the new kingdom. How well it spoke of him. And obviously, his reputation and things have to have been brought to the new leadership. And notice what it says here, the decision that you have. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom. If you go to chapter 3, which Glenn taught on, Nebuchadnezzar had the same thing, satraps. It's leaders that you have. So it's a massive empire. I can't govern all of it, so you elect different people, cabinet, whatever, to run this part of the country, this part of the country, and so on. You'll notice then there's 120 of them. Then over the 120 in verse 2, there was three commissioners. So then if that's the case, each would have roughly 40 under them, and Daniel happened to be one who was over 40 of them. You'll see what their job was then. So notice the decision, notice their duties, that they would be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Okay, so they then, a vast kingdom, do you think there could be any corruption along the way? So what happens is, and this is where part of the problem comes in, okay, so you have 120 reporting to three, those three report then to the king. Okay, now the word goes out that Daniel's doing such a good job that he's going to be over all of them. If that's the case, they're all going to have to report to him. Now, if there is fraud or if there is embezzlement or different things going on, is Daniel going to catch it? Everywhere you go, I mean, it's amazing, even where I work for different things, they have kickbacks, legal kickbacks. It's amazing what happens is you'll all say, "Well, I want to get this part from so-and-so." Well, that costs twice as much money. I can go over here. Nope. You're required to get it from here. Why am I buying from these people? Why am I renting from these people if it's costing the company so much more? Because that's what you're told to do. All right. And there's the legal kickbacks. That's part of why you have it here. The reason for it, they don't want Daniel over it, is because of the embezzlement part. And I'm sure part of it has to do with an exile a Jew being over top, so you'll have some of that prejudice you'll have as well. But you have those two factors that are taking place. Think about it. Reminds me of a scripture I've often thought about in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23. Do you work heartily as to the Lord rather than to men? You think about it. Does that fit down? You're in your 80s. Isn't it time to retire? And how much, by the way, you know, a lot of us were working, we're in our 80s or whatever, but how many are working full time and how many are in this kind of responsibility? That's amazing when you think about the types of stuff he's being asked to do at this time in his life. So think about it when you have that. So the question you can ask yourself, who do I work for and what type of performance am I giving? Should it make a difference as to what age you are? It should still be the same. So notice then, not only is he prominent, notice the plot against him, you know it well. Then the commissioners and satraps began, notice then there'd be, out of 123, there'd be 122 of them. They tried to begin to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to the government affairs. They could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, insomuch as faithful and no neglect or corruption was to be found in it. Do you think they did much digging? So again, that's taking time. How much time did it take for him to rise to power, all these things to take place? We're definitely in his 80s. And not one thing can be found. How far would people have to dig in our life before they could find something? An amazing question. Notice then, the only problem that they can find, and this is their discernment in verse 5, these men said, we shall not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel, unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. Was his a private faith? I mean, was he faithful to his job? You can be faithful to God and faithful to your job at the same time. You can do a great job, even among pagan individuals who are serving a pagan person, and do a great job. Daniel was. It's amazing when you have it doing this. So you think about the decision then, and we know it well. They then go to the king, and they ask the king to make a law, and basically they're appealing to his pride and stuff. Make a statue of yourself and make it out to be a god, and everybody has to worship you. Now, they know Daniel, they know his consistency, and they know he's not going to do it. By the way, has this happened a few years earlier? Under a different regime, do you think maybe they might have even been reminded about this and knew that Daniel would, what he would do? So notice then, the king then gives the injunction that you have in 8, and then in verse 9 he signs it. It's called the Law of the Medes and Persians. Esther, three times in the book of Esther, he had the law, which comes later. It's the, if you remember in chapter 1 of Esther, in verse 19, with Vashti, they give the deal, and she was taken down, and a new one was brought in. Esther was eventually. And then twice, you remember, with Haman, the law went out then to kill the Jews. That was the second law. And then the third one came out that they could protect themselves. Couldn't be changed. I remember growing up, my dad would come up with certain things in the house or whatever, and we'd try to plead our case. And they'd go, nope, that's the law of the Medes and the Persians. So I know this really well. You know, in other words, it's not changing. It's what it is. So notice then, once they signed it, notice they appealed to his pride. I think it's important for all of us to recognize how many times can people do that kind of stuff to us, trick us into things. I had customers all the time. You catch on after a while. They'd give you compliments or whatever, and all of a sudden you knew immediately what is it you want. You know, just the way it came up. Or my kids were smaller when they would work for me, and it was kind of funny. Dad, you look so tired and hot. You need a drink. What they really were saying, Dad, I want a drink.
Yeah.
It worked quite well, but they.
You know, I'll go get it, by the way.
Yeah, you know, let's quit work and let's go get a drink.
Yeah.
But the question you can ask yourself on this plot, what evidence would they find on me? Would they find some? And the interesting, too, how long would they have to look? And I think it's important for it. So here you have it. The plot's going out. And obviously, the man of consistency doing a great job. Let's look at his prayer then in verse 10 down in verse 11. Verse 10, the first part. Now, the document Daniel knew the document was signed. Okay, remember, he didn't know about the part initially because he wasn't. They lied, you remember, and they said everybody was asked and was in agreement, which is not the case. They also included commissioners and officials and everything else, which probably they didn't contact them either. They probably just did it among the 122 and lied about it. But needless to say, public knowledge. Notice this practice. I think it's interesting when you look at it in verse 10 and 11. And he entered his house. Now, talking about interesting too, he owned a home. In his roof chamber, he had the windows open towards Jerusalem. He continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petitions and supplications before his God. Look at his practice. When did he pray?
Three times a day,
based on Psalms 55:17, when David he wrote the psalm, to pray in the evening and in the morning and at noon. He's following. Why did he face Jerusalem? It comes out of 2 Chronicles 6:21, and then also in 34 and 38. When Solomon, when he built the temple, he said you need to pray facing the temple. And then in verse 34, he said you need to pray facing this land. And then later he says pray facing this city. Now the temple was destroyed, but Daniel is still honoring it three times a day, facing the land and facing the city. Now, could not Daniel have done the same but changed his times? Couldn't Daniel still pray and not open the window? Does he know the decree? Does he know what's facing him? Does he know what the outcome will be? He knows the rest will be there, and he knows he's going to the lion's den, but he has no idea that he's going to be spared. It's interesting, the man of consistency. At the end of his life, couldn't he have said, well, you know, I've been faithful, I've done all this, I can do a whole lot more for my people if I'm alive than if I'm dead. He could come up with a lot of things. It's interesting when you think about it, but notice what it says. What does it say he did first? He gives thanks. If you were in Daniel's position and you know they're watching, what would be the first thing you do? Would you be giving God thanks? And what would Daniel be giving God thanks for? You ever stop and think about it? So if that's the case, is there ever a day, no matter what's going on, that we cannot thank God for something? If Daniel can thank God for something, we can too. Notice it also says petitions and supplications. What would your petition or supplication be? But notice it says three times a day. So what would he be asking? If you were in your 80s and you're trying to do this job, do you think maybe you'd be asking for wisdom to do the job? Do you think you may be asking for strength? Hey, I'm kind of old. This is kind of a tough job at this age. It shows the dependence that Daniel had on God. He has tremendous abilities. God gave him abilities. You remember, all the way back in chapter 1, he had 10 times greater than the ones that were also on Nebuchadnezzar's team. Tremendous ability. Also, do you think maybe the sharpness as you get older, any of you notice some sharpness leaving? Okay, that's important for us to recognize. Daniel is asking God for help. Does that not remind us of Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6 and 7? Be anxious for what? But by thanksgiving, what? Let your requests be made known to God. Notice it. And then with, you know, talking about with the you're then going to have your peace will come your way. He's practicing Daniel, Colossians 3, working. He's practicing being anxious for nothing, just like Paul did when he was in prison. He's doing the exact same things we're told to do. So you think about it, interesting in the prayer part of it, in Acts 5 and verse 29, was he not practicing what Peter said? I must obey what? God rather than man? So notice Daniel is setting all of it, consistency all the way through. And he's setting it. It's interesting when you think about it. Who would you obey? If we're given decrees, and by the way, we are given certain decrees. Even if you go to Canada now, you cannot openly talk to people about your faith. It's against the law. So you go across the Canadian border, you're not even supposed to talk about Jesus publicly. Against the law. A lot of people aren't aware of it. What are your prayer habits? Would you change it? Would you do three times a day? Do you give thanks three times a day? Are you asking for God's help three times a day? What do you include? And would it change irregardless of the laws of the land? Notice that when you think about it, the prosecution of Daniel that you have in verse 12 and then down to 17, the reminder, notice they all come before the king and they're going to remind him of the law. You know, remember this law you signed? Everybody had to bow down? Yeah, I remember. Notice then what they say. Remember they at the end of verse 12, remember the Medes and Persians? You can't change the law. They want to make sure that he realizes what he's done. And then notice in 13, then they answered and spoke to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah. Why didn't they say Daniel, who is a commissioner, who's about to be put in charge of everything? Notice, same thing happened to Belteshazzar, remember, one of the exiles. Prejudice has been going on for ever since the beginning of time. But notice then, makes petitions three times a day. Well, notice that, how do they know it was three times a day? Obviously, they've been watching him, and they caught him the first one they brought in, but three times a day. Didn't listen to your laws. So think about it. The revelations then given in 13. Notice then the rescue attempt. As soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed. Was he caught in his own words? Same thing happened with Saul. Remember, whoever, you know, he was going to kill Jonathan too. You can make rash statements. We need to really be careful in what we say and so on. Because people will try to trap us in our own words and try to get us to make commitments and then we then can't keep or don't want to keep. Notice then what happens. He tries all day long to exert him and free him, but he can't. So notice then at the end, hey, recognize, O kings, the laws of the Medes and Persians. You know, you think about it, okay, if they throw Daniel in, also, what are these men now doing with their relationship with the king? They're getting rid of someone, but obviously they're putting themselves in a bad light with the king. But they care more about getting rid of Daniel. So notice then, he can't change it, so the orders is given to throw him in. Notice the recognition, it's interesting, of Darius, which we don't know how long he's known Daniel. Long enough to put him in power and then have him rise. But notice in 16, the king gave orders and Daniel was brought in and cast in the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God whom you serve, constantly serve, will he himself deliver you. Now that's an amazing statement. Did Darius hear about his friends being spared earlier under the previous regime? Possible. Maybe also why these men decided to do what they did with the law. It's amazing. Obviously, his faith was a public faith. And notice then, it's coming down to the different things. But it's interesting how the king is making a statement as well as a question. He served him continually. Will he be spared? And notice then, the stone was then rolled and a seal was put on it. And notice not only the seal of the king, but also all the people. They'd put that on there, that way if it was tampered with, you would know, because the seal, wax seal, would be seen. Very similar to what they did with Jesus when they sealed the tomb. That way if it was moved, people would know it. So here he is, they put in there, and if you think about it, what they'd have is they'd have a cave, and on the top they'd have an opening, and then they could open and drop things into the cave and then reseal it. And they'd have an entrance in and out on the outside where the animals could come in and go out. So this is what you have here with the lions. And there isn't just one lion, and they'd be some hungry lions. Reminds me a few years ago when the person decides to jump in with the bears and then the polar bear and then splash water on him and got him in. We know what the result is. I mean, you don't go swimming with the polar bear and make him mad. One little swat with the polar bear, you know, and you no longer are in this world alive. So here you have it with the lions, and you think about it. We know it well, he's cast. The thought is, when you look at this part of it, do others recognize whom I serve? Do they recognize? Notice all of them recognized who Daniel served. The king did, the commissioners did, the satraps, all of them knew who he served. Also, as with Esther, it was Daniel for a moment like this. Why would God allow Daniel to be here? Why would he put him in this predicament? Isn't that what we usually ask? But what happens as a result of his faithfulness? Is the king exposed to the true God? Is the nation exposed to the true God? Is the commissioners, satraps, revolt? So I think we need to ask ourselves, not why, but what can I do for you in it? The important thing to ask. So we know the protection, and notice the concern from 18 down to 20. And life was really easy for them to come and go by. So it shows that, you know, because they would, basically what's getting ready to happen, how many people are going to be killed, it didn't concern the king at all. But how much concern he has for Daniel in this aspect, part of it because of the personal loss. He fasted and no entertainment was brought to him, and he didn't sleep all night thinking about Daniel. And then obviously he rises up early the next morning and he runs to the cave, to the where the lions are. And when he gets there, he cries out, "Daniel, the servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, enabled to deliver you from the lions?" You know, it's amazing when you're asking the question. And then notice with Daniel, I think it's interesting, the two reasons he's spared. Notice Daniel spoke to the king, "O king, live forever." Should he have been there? How am I supposed to make that nice, sweet talk to the king? "My God sent his angels and shut the lion's mouth. They have not harmed me." Notice the first reason. "Insomuch as I was found innocent before him and also towards you, O king, I have committed no crime." Okay, the first reason was I did nothing wrong and he spared me. Notice the second reason. "Then the king was very pleased, gave orders for Daniel to be taken out of the den. So Daniel was taken out of the den and no injury or whatever was found on him because he had trusted in his God." Both. Think about that. Would we be spared because we were innocent in all charges and we are innocent and also because we trusted God? How many of us, if you're being thrown in the lion's den, would trust God? How many of us would say, "Well, there's nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. I'm innocent in all things, and God will spare me"? It's interesting, those two reasons that Daniel gives as to why he was spared. And I think it's a question we can ask ourselves, too. You know, would I be spared? Why or why not? Interesting question. And by the way, whom I also should bring you to the true God. He's showing Darius who the true God is. It's interesting when you look at it, this part that you have here, the casting of the accusers. Notice in 24, he gave orders, those men who had maliciously accused Daniel. How many would that be? 122. That's all his leadership. And their wives and their children. So how large a number are we talking about? You're talking about, you know, they'd have at least one wife and have had at least two kids. You're talking 400 or 500 people. They were all cast in, and notice it said before they reached the bottom, the lions had overpowered and killed every one of them. So obviously this is a good-sized den, and also obviously not all, you know, you're throwing them in. How many can you go in at a time? But they were being killed, every one of them. But think about the human life aspect, and just life meant nothing so far to the king, but also you think about the fact leadership's now going to turn to who? Daniel, obviously, he was going to have the position, but now who are you going to work with and so on? If you think about it, just the part that you have here, and then notice what the king now says, the proclamation of the king. It's interesting in 25. "Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, men of every language who are living in the land, may your peace abound." Notice in 26 and then in 27 what he says. "I make a decree that all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel." That's amazing because that wasn't the God that they served beforehand. Or any. Notice what he also says. Very similar to what Nebuchadnezzar had said earlier. "For he is the living God and enduring forever. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. His dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." Amazing statement that Darius makes. Again, would he have made it if Daniel had not been the man that he was, and living the way that he did and making it known? Why does God put us in hard situations? So that we can make statements and do things like this, or we can respond like Solomon did or like Hezekiah did. The choices are ours, but the outcome is greatly depending on things. Let's think about it then, how we can do it. A man of consistency with Daniel. Do I do I work heartily as unto the Lord? You know, how many of you would like to go under his serving that many years, foreign pagan kings, and still be in faith? Would accusers have any evidence on me? Would they have any? Does my prayer life resemble that of Daniel? Am I giving thanks? Do I make petitions, supplications? Do I do it three times a day? Am I obedient, following what God says? And think about it also, were the reasons given for Daniel's protection, if that was true in my case, would God be protecting me? That's why we go for grace and we go for mercy, but it's interesting God protected him for those two reasons on that particular occasion. So I think it's interesting for us to ask that too.